Peter B. Collins News and Comment. It's Friday, January 16, 2015. It's a mad, mad world. Fear-mongering has gone global. Today we'll touch on the visit by the Prime Minister of Britain to the Obama White House and various issues related to the so-called war on terrorism. It has heated up in new and unexpected ways. And, you know, last fall we had all this fear injected around the Islamic State and Ebola. And I felt a lot of that was timed to coincide with the midterm elections. But there's no election looming. And here in the United States, the FBI is on a very aggressive media blitz, in my humble opinion. Yesterday, we went into some detail on the case of the Ohio man, 20-year-old Christopher Cornell, who has been charged with planning to blow up pipe bombs at the U.S. Capitol. And I broke it down for you that this is another well-timed frame-up coming from the FBI. And as if to extend the news cycle to a second day, the FBI fed exclusive surveillance footage to ABC Television News, which dutifully featured it prominently in its primetime newscast on Thursday. I'm going to play an excerpt from that for you in just a second. But here we have a case that is not even current. This goes back to 2012. And it is framed around the case of the man from Ohio, as if this shows that this is a pattern of behavior. Widespread lone wolves in the United States who maybe watch a video of Anwar al-Awlaki and decide to become freelance jihadis. The only problem with the narrative, as I've pointed out, is that almost every one of these cases includes an FBI informant who is paid by the government to monitor, manipulate, and set up this guy. And in some cases, these are people with criminal records who are, buying a little easing of a sentence or maybe dropping charges in an unrelated case. So ABC makes a big deal and ties it together, just like the FBI information specialists want them to. And listen to this report. It's on the verge of hysteria, and this guy was locked up for a long sentence more than 2 years ago.
And now to that ABC News exclusive tonight, revealing how serious and how real the threat is here at home. Video never before seen until tonight right here. The FBI and the terrorist who they say was determined to kill right here in America. ABC Senior Justice Correspondent Pierre Thomas with the tape.
That's Amin al-Khalifi in a D.C. area hotel room brandishing a machine gun he hoped to use to massacre members of Congress at the U.S. Capitol.
And one of the things that becomes clear just in watching this video report is that this guy has never used an automatic weapon before. He doesn't know what to do with it. I mean, he knows which way to point it, and he knows where the trigger is. But his FBI handler is explaining to him how an automatic weapon works.
It's fully automatic. So that means when you hold it...
How many hits in here?
30. It's full auto. You hold the trigger, it's going to keep firing. It's going to keep firing.
Tonight, this exclusive look inside an FBI undercover sting targeting a man the Bureau believes was a homegrown radical bomber.
This is one more example of the fact that this threat that we have talked about is very real.
Here's Khalifi at a Home Depot buying.
This is one more example. That's an FBI spokesman who is hammering home the propaganda talking point. And that is that we need to be very afraid. We need to give up our constitutional rights because there are evildoers lurking nearby, and the FBI is doing their best to track them and interrupt their crimes before they can pull them off. That's the whole message that is being offered. And what is so infuriating is that time after time, when you closely examine these cases, they're bullshit. And that's what the father of the Ohio man said yesterday. And so they trot out another case to hammer home the propaganda. Remember what Bush said? about how his job was to project the propaganda, catapult, that was the word he used, to catapult the propaganda and then just repeat it until people took it as truth.
Nails to use as shrapnel in an explosive vest.
Thick ones I got, thick ones, not thin ones. The one who's gonna make damage, right?
Yeah.
Man, don't be nervous, man. Come on, man.
This is Khalifi driving out to test a bomb, unaware that the men that are with him are undercover FBI. He thinks they're Al-Qaeda.
I'm gonna put everything in my body. I'm gonna go inside.
So here is clear evidence that the FBI framed this guy. They took him out to an abandoned mine area and showed him how to, use a cell phone to blow up an explosive. And so here the FBI has supplied the means. We learn from the public defender that they paid some of his debts. They promised a martyrdom bonus to his parents. They provided weapons and explosives with training on how to use them, logistical advice, religious reinforcement of supposed like-minded Islamists. I mean, the FBI is getting really good at this. And as it happens in so many cases, the man that they framed in 2012 named Khalifi, certainly he was a hothead, and he said stupid things. And he seemed to enjoy going along for the ride. But what were his true intentions? We'll never know, because he pleaded guilty to a single count of trying to use a weapon of mass destruction. And by pleading guilty, there's no trial, there is no contest of the evidence, there is no disclosure of the way the FBI set the guy up for this crime. And it really troubles me that the corporate media just passes along this propaganda. They think, wow, we got a hot story here and we're going to get good ratings. And they are colluding in what becomes the textbook definition of fascism. Well, that's not all. Britain's David Cameron, the Prime Minister, was at the White House today to meet with President Obama. They held a news conference, and I've seen news accounts of the news conference, but I have not watched it or read it in detail. One of the key things I was looking for is a report that David Cameron pressed President Obama to release Shaker Amer, the last Briton being held at Guantanamo. That's something I care about a great deal, and I hope that either privately or both privately and publicly, Cameron did push Mr. Obama to release Shaker Amer as quickly as possible. But Cameron, of course, has been calling for greater surveillance in Britain. He wants total access to the internet. He wants to ban services, like WhatsApp, that don't provide a backdoor for GCHQ, the British equivalent of NSA, to monitor all communications. And President Obama gave a kind of qualified support to that. He didn't take a position on the statement made by Cameron, but he said it's important to be able to keep tabs on terrorists who are using social media and the internet. When we have the ability to track that in a way that is legal, conforms with due process, rule of law, and oversight, then that's a capability we have to preserve, says Obama. Well, he pretends that everything that's being done is legal, conforms with due process and the rule of law, and as we'll discuss here in a moment, that is flatly untrue. Now, in addition, I will give Cameron credit because he echoed the president's sentiments in rejecting the proposed additional sanctions on Iran that the Republican-controlled Congress is threatening to pass. And this comes at a stage when there appears to be progress in the nuclear talks with Iran. They were meeting in Vienna just this week. And the president threatens to veto any further sanctions that might come from the Congress. Now, we have events that have occurred in the last 24 hours. In Belgium, two suspects were killed in a gun battle. And so their deaths will prevent us from learning exactly who they were and what they were up to. The shootout took place in the town of Verviers, 75 miles from Brussels, near the border with Germany. And these were described as fighters who had been to Syria and returned to Belgium. This all may be true. But I'm very skeptical. Because we're seeing, I think, a very carefully orchestrated government response. And I do understand that because of the European Union and the relaxation of borders, that people can travel pretty freely among European nations, and it makes it difficult if Belgian police have been monitoring somebody, they cross over into the Netherlands or Luxembourg. Is there reciprocity? Is there really an Interpol that has any teeth? I understand there are serious law enforcement problems. But the French are going way too far too fast. Just in the past week, a 28-year-old man was sentenced to 6 months in prison after he was found guilty of shouting support for the attackers on Charlie Hebdo as he passed a police station in a small town in France. Here's one that's even worse. A 34-year-old man who hit a car while he was drunk, injured the other driver, was sentenced to 4 years in prison because while he was in police custody and presumably still drunk, he said, "Oh, they killed Charlie and I had a good laugh. In the past, they killed Bin Laden, Saddam Hussein, Mohammed Merah, I don't know who that is, and many brothers. If I didn't have a father or mother, I would train in Syria." Now, these are the ravings of a drunken man. And he didn't threaten violence. He expressed sympathy. And you and I may not agree with his sentiments. But does he deserve 4 years in prison? And, you know, this was very swift, the way that the French imposed this sentence. And so to see these actions taken after this historic photo op march in Paris last Sunday. And have you happened to see the long-range pictures? Because the photo that we were shown of Netanyahu and other world leaders marching linked arm in arm down the street, well, it looked like there were millions of people marching behind them. But an aerial viewer, at least one taken from a building a few floors up, showed that there were only a couple of hundred people in the crowd behind the world leaders staging their photo op. And perhaps they did that for security reasons. I can understand that. But the impression that most of the world got simply from looking at the pictures or video depictions is that, wow, Netanyahu's a courageous guy. He's out there in a throng of people risking his life to speak up for freedom of expression in France. Well, that picture showed me a lot just about the way this is orchestrated and scripted stuff. And in reaction to some of the same news events, the New York Times reached out, and in a news article a couple of days ago, after the video had been released from Yemen, where Al-Qaeda from the Arabian Peninsula claims credit for the attack on Charlie Hebdo in Paris, the Times quoted an anonymous member of Al-Qaeda. Now, this raised a number of questions when I read it, because the Times routinely allows anonymous leaks and anonymous quotes from government officials here in the United States. Calculated professional leakers. And that, of course, is not a crime when whistleblowers like Snowden, Manning, Tom Drake, John Kiriakou, they throw the book at them for revealing classified information. So I thought it was pretty ballsy of the New York Times to quote an Al-Qaeda source and to grant him or her anonymity. And I also think it's interesting because the Times has to know that whether a reporter interviewed that person in the flesh or whether it was done through emails or a phone call, our government was probably monitoring it. So it makes it even richer when the head of the FBI, Too Tall Jim Comey, slams the New York Times for anonymously quoting a member of a terrorist group. Quote from Comey, your decision to grant anonymity to a spokesperson for Al-Qaeda in the Arabian Peninsula so he could clarify the role of his group in assassinating innocents, including a wounded police officer, and distinguish it from the assassination of other innocents in Paris in the name of another group of terrorists, is both mystifying and disgusting. I fear you have lost your way and urge you to reconsider allowing your newspaper to be used by those who have murdered so many and work every day to murder more. So here, the head of the FBI is telling the New York Times they should have censored themselves. And what they were trying to do is figure out, you know, the two gunmen who went to Charlie Hebdo, as we discussed yesterday, pledge allegiance to Al-Qaeda. The other guy who shot four French Jewish people at the kosher deli, he pledged to the fraternity called the Islamic State. And I have seen one American news anchor after another say, ah, who cares? Al-Qaeda, ISIS, you know, they're just jihadis. They're just, you know, they want to say they're just raghead radicals. Well, it does make a difference. And I give the New York Times credit for trying to share that information with its readers. And Jim Comey says that it's un-American, that they have lost their way by practicing journalism. Now, this comes in almost the same breath as testimony yesterday in the trial of the CIA-accused leaker Jeffrey Sterling. And under oath, Condoleezza Rice, the former National Security Advisor, former Secretary of State, described how back during the Bush administration, she successfully persuaded the editors of the New York Times not to publish the story that James Risen ultimately revealed in a book that he published. The Times has never published the story about this CIA operation that went so badly. It was an effort to deliver, intentionally flawed nuclear designs to the Iranians. And it backfired. The Iranians figured it out real fast. But our government wanted to keep it secret. And so Rice said, well, there are basically two ways that you get a newspaper to kill a story. You can essentially confirm it and then argue that it's too important to national security to be published, or you take the approach that the reporter is about to publish something that is inaccurate. And Condoleezza Rice said she used both tactics when she met with an editor and with Jim Risen back in 2003. And the Times itself discloses that under Bush, the Times withheld stories about the existence of a black site prison in Thailand, the CIA's interrogation and detention program, what they call warrantless wiretapping, I call it illegal wiretapping, and government monitoring of financial transactions. The Times goes on to say that the Obama administration has persuaded it and or other outlets to delay publishing the existing of a drone base in Saudi Arabia, the name of a country in which a drone strike against an American citizen was being considered, Yemen, and the fact that a diplomat arrested in Pakistan was a CIA officer. So the Times, right here in black and white in its own newspaper, is telling us how the government gets it to kill stories. And so we live in a bizarre time, in a mad world, where in one breath we have the FBI director criticizing the Times for, you know, legitimate journalistic endeavors. And then we have Condoleezza Rice telling how, yeah, you know, you just sit down with the Times and you either lie to them and tell them they don't have the right facts, or you confirm the story and tell them that it would be too damaging to reveal it. Oh, there's more, friends. But first, every day I like to pause and look through the list of people who recently kicked in a few bucks to the Peter B. Collins podcast. Peter Carroll, Susan Gavet, Gary Washington, Jeff Zeiser. They're all monthly subscribers who kick in $5 here. You've got $5, don't you, that you can use to support my work? Well, if you do, come on over to peterbcollins.com. Click on the sign-up link right under my picture. Next page lets you choose $5, $10, $20 a month, or our best deal, the $50 annual subscription. New annual subscribers from anywhere within the sound of my voice earn a copy of the bonus book. It's an ebook edition of Pepe Escobar's latest, called Empire of Chaos. Well, amidst all of this feared up hysteria, 9 days after the attacks in Paris, we get a report that was commissioned by the Obama White House that tells us that a federal study has concluded that there is no effective alternative to the government's bulk collection of telephone metadata about every phone call made in the United States. Yeah, there's no other choice. They must collect this information, they tell us. And this is insulting to anyone who believes in the Bill of Rights. The Fourth Amendment is not optional. It's not based on whether it's convenient or not to collect everybody's phone records. It's very clear. And yet, we have people who are willing to turn a blind eye to our established constitutional rights and just say, you know, these terrorists are so bad that we have no choice. And we don't need to go to court to rationalize it. We don't need to prove it to anybody. And this comes from a White House that has locked in and expanded the surveillance efforts that were started under Bush. And Ed Snowden, if you're listening in Moscow, I feel very sad because you upended your life permanently. And you revealed a lot of important things that the American people deserve to know and the world deserves to know. And when you told Laura Poitras in Hong Kong that your biggest fear is that you do this and nothing will happen, well, Ed, I'm sorry to say that's where we are today. Now, as if that report isn't alarming and insulting enough, the so-called Justice Department yesterday revealed the existence of yet another database of American telephone records. This one is maintained by the DEA, the Drug Enforcement Agency. It contains the records of calls made between phone numbers in the U.S. and overseas, they say, even if there's no evidence the callers were involved in criminal activity. Yeah, what's the probable cause there, DEA? Now they go to some effort to tell us that this program has been disbanded. It ended, they say, in 2012. But this really points out something that I've been talking about for a long time. Even when President Obama proposed really modest reforms to NSA surveillance. And then we had the USA Freedom Act last year, Jim Sensenbrenner, the Republican from Wisconsin, trying to fix some of the most egregious abuses of the Patriot Act in terms of collection of data. None of that passed. Nothing happened. And so what we've seen here is that multiple agencies use the same practices. Now, one of the points I made at the time is that reining in the NSA is absolutely essential. But it's not the only agency that is consistently violating our constitutional rights. Now, I've been really rough on Eric Holder. He has resigned as Attorney General, but awaiting confirmation of his successor, he is still in charge of the so-called Justice Department. And today it was announced via an anonymous source at the Justice Department. Take that, Jim Comey. It was not apparently a member of Al-Qaeda. But this is a very good move, and I want to commend the Attorney General for taking significant action. He has announced that they're going to bar local and state police from using federal law to seize cash, cars, and other property without evidence that a crime occurred. These are called civil asset forfeitures. Now, we've seen cases where cops picked up a guy for speeding, found out he had 10 grand with him in the car. They confiscated the money, and he never got the money back. He wasn't charged with a crime. He wasn't running drugs. Nothing. There are many other examples like that. And John Oliver, the comic who has a new Sunday night half-hour show on HBO, and I don't know when it returns to the screen. It wasn't on last week. He deserves credit. He's a British guy. And he did a report that was extremely funny but highly factual about the abuse of these civil asset seizure rules. And it started with the war on drugs and the DEA. And so Eric Holder has decided to sharply limit the use of state and by state and local agencies of federal law and processes to conduct these seizures. And he put some limits that will eliminate virtually all cash and vehicle seizures made by local and state police from the federal program. Now, they still may be able to do the same thing under state law, but the federal law was seen as so easy for these agencies to abuse that, that's how the $3 billion number reached that level. Here's a really crazy announcement coming from the Pentagon today. We're sending 400 U.S. military personnel and hundreds of other support people to train vetted, moderate Syrian rebels. Now, Congress passed $500 million to chase the mythical idea that there are Syrian moderate rebels who can be trusted by the United States to be trained, armed, and they won't either lose to the Islamic State and give their weapons to them that way, or, just crumble like the Iraqi army did in the face of the Islamic State last summer. And this is so fucking crazy. Pardon my language. But I believe it needs to be emphasized. It is totally crazy. And this is just part of the we've got to do something mentality in Washington. And the only criticism of Obama for sending these 400 troops, and you can be sure that more will follow, is that he's not doing enough and he's not doing it fast enough. There are Republicans who want even more crazy shit. Like newly minted Senator Tom Cotton from Arkansas. So far it's been slow, and it'll continue to be slow. And it certainly won't be sufficient to stop the Islamic State. That is the Republican talking point, that no matter what Obama does, it's not enough. And this is ludicrous. We don't have a plan. We're going to train up these rebels and tell them they must defeat the Assad government and they must defeat the Islamic State radicals. And then what? Then what are we going to do with Syria? It is just mind-boggling. And I think you can tell it gets me a little worked up. A few items quickly before I wrap up the podcast today. I will link to this important first installment at the Guardian newspaper today. It's an installment of a book written by a man who is still being held at Guantanamo Bay, Cuba. And the excerpts are, eye-opening. His name is Mahamadou Ould Slahi. He's a native of Mauritania. He's been held there for 13 years. He has been cleared for release by a judge in 2010, but he is not on the list for transfer anytime soon. And he reveals some new types of torture that we've never heard about. And these are things that I don't have explicit confirmation here, but it appears they happen off the shore of Guantanamo. He said that he was subjected to sleep deprivation, death threats, sexual humiliation, and intimations that his torturers would go after his mother. And after enduring this, he was subjected to additional interrogation techniques personally approved by the defense secretary at the time, Don Rumsfeld. He was blindfolded, forced to drink salt water, which makes you crazy, then taken out to sea on a high-speed boat where he was beaten for 3 hours while immersed in ice. I mean, what did they do? Dig up some medieval book on torture in a dungeon and then say, well, let's do it on the water, man. To end the torture? He lied. Slahi made a false confession in a number of cases in an attempt to end the torment, telling interrogators, okay, I plan to blow up a tower in Toronto. Asked if he was telling the truth, he said, "I don't care, as long as you are pleased. So if you want to buy, I am selling." So I'm looking forward to reading more from this book. I'll try to get a copy and share more information with you if I'm able to do that. Also on our detention patrol, based on some of the redacted details in the Senate Intelligence Committee's CIA torture review, a group in England, a human rights group called Reprieve, we've talked about them before, they are asserting that there was a black site in Lithuania, codenamed Violet, in the Senate Intelligence Committee's report. And they believe that it was used in 2005-2006. So far, they've been able to track the torture taxi charter air flights to and from this location in Lithuania, but they haven't been able to identify who was actually held at that black site. More information keeps trickling out. And finally today, the world is yawning about these issues. Two reports published on the same day. A team of scientists have concluded that humans are on the verge of causing unprecedented damage to the oceans and the animals living in them. There could be a full collapse of sea life on the globe. Now, putting a happy face on it, Martin Pinsky, a marine biologist at Rutgers and author of the new report, said, "Well, we're lucky in some ways. The impacts are accelerating, but they're not so bad we can't reverse them." Well, maybe that's accurate scientifically, but politically, we see that there is no will to confront the greatest challenge to humans on the planet. And that is shocking and par for the course all at the same time. The other report confirmed that last year was the hottest year in the Earth's recorded history. 2014 now surpasses 2010 as the warmest year in global temperature recorded recording that goes back to the about 1880. Thanks for joining me today for news and comment. This is the Peter B. Collins podcast that you're invited to share with absolutely everyone. I hope you will. Thanks for listening.
Happy trails to you until we meet again. Happy trails to you. Keep smiling.